And I guess I was fortunate that I had a story to tell, but everyone has stories to tell. Everyone has stories to tell that other people are interested in, whatever level you're at. I think, you know, I'll watch someone who has just started out as an estate agent as much as I'll listen to you or watch you on a podcast or a video, because I think everyone's got interesting stories.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, it's Sam here. Today we're joined by Adam Day, a true pioneer in the UK real estate industry and a driving force behind EXP's remarkable growth across the whole of the UK, now Europe and India as well. Adam has been reshaping the property industry in the UK since 2006 when he founded Hatched.co.uk, one of the OG online agents to enter the UK market. And fast forward to today, he's led EXP UK to be one of the country's largest estate agencies in just over 4 years, all without a big budget for traditional marketing. He's widely considered one of the most influential figures in British real estate. So without further ado, let's welcome Adam Day.
Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great for you to be here. And I'd also just like to address Steve Carroll, who is very well known to Australian audiences, has sometimes taken over for me on the podcast, and I've asked him to come here and be the English interpreter in case I need one.
So, great to be here.
Yeah, amazing. First of all, Adam, Merry Christmas all over the socials, everywhere. All I'm seeing is EXP's UK Christmas party. So first of all, I'd like to ask you, how is that? And what are some of the highlights of that night?
That's reached down under, has it? Oh, mate, yeah. That's amazing. Fantastic. Love it. Yeah, it was great. Last Thursday, yeah, really, really good. It's kind of become the premier Christmas event across the industry, actually. So we've got people coming from EXP. We've got people coming who are not part of EXP. We have suppliers, obviously, trying to sell us stuff over there. And yeah, it was a really, really good evening. We have a famous comedian. So we have Catherine Ryan, who's a famous comedian over here, and a band, and all stuff that estate agents in the UK like, which is drinking and dancing, basically. So very good.
Yeah, you just mentioned, and I noticed, I did pick up that on the invitation to the EXP Christmas party. See, in Australia, I don't think the franchises like any of the other franchises infiltrating their Christmas parties. I think it's all a bit like, no, but you took a completely different approach to that.
Yeah, one of the things actually somebody posted on LinkedIn following the event, and they said, I can't remember who it was now, Matt Baldock maybe. And he says, one of the things that EXP's done really well is being completely inclusive for everybody. You know, whether you're part of Keller Williams or whether you're part of a traditional sort of estate agency brokerage business, then you're welcome. We've been very open about that. Actually, that was something I learned in the US with EXP back in 2019. I was very much of that mindset of closed shop. You're not allowed in. You can't see anything. I've been a fairly open book over the years, but not to the extent of a Christmas party or events and stuff like that. But yeah, very, very open, very happy for people to come along. And that's one of the values of Glenn, who's the founder of EXP, is transparency and being open to allow everyone to come and have a look and see what it's all about, pinch ideas, copy us, whatever. You're still going to be 10 years behind us anyway.
Yeah, tis the season to be jolly in any case.
Indeed.
So at the top of the show, I said, and I've talked to Steve about this as well, as you've been credited with moving like a 300-year-old industry into a new space. So what was the moment that you realised in the UK, or that you realised that in the UK, the traditional agency needed to change?
That's a good question. Probably in 1997. I mean, I started as a traditional estate agent, and I was on the cusp of the internet not being there and then the internet being there. So I was at school, and there was no internet, but there was computers, and we were getting taught computers right at the end of the last 2 or 3 years of my school days. So I'd learned how to use pen and paper and how to communicate through pen and paper. And then all of a sudden the internet came along, but I was young enough to pick the internet up. I'm not saying people, you know, my mum, she wasn't picking the internet up. And so I think when I got that job in 1997, and I did a couple of years there, and then the internet came along in like 1999, 2000, it started becoming a bit more of a thing, dial up and all those funny little buzzes and sounds. And I just felt that back then, even then, that real estate agency could be done in a different way. I remember getting offered a job in 2001 by a company that was going to be an online estate agent in London. And it never transpired, it never came to pass, the business never started, never got off the ground. But ever since then, kind of 2001 probably, when Rightmove came along, and for us in the UK, Rightmove leveled the playing field. There's one example actually where I used to work for a company called Country Properties, and we had a big double fronted office on the high street, and then there was another company in the town called Stevens, small little office around the back of the church, no one knew where they were. And at the time, Country Properties, of course, was the biggest estate agency in the town, had a double fronted office. We had the prime spot on the high street. The Stevens were a nobody, an absolute nobody. They were doing one or two listings a month. We were doing 20, 25 a month. And then Rightmove came along and they leveled the playing field. And then Stevens would go out to a client over the years. It wasn't instant, but they would go to a client and say, we're on Rightmove. And then the client would come to me and say, well, they're on Rightmove and that's where you need to be. And that's, why are you charging 2% and they're charging 1%? Because you're going to give us the same service and the same coverage. And it was the entry of the portals probably that kind of made me realize that, or maybe think, not maybe realize, because I think portals have made agents lazy as well over the years. I think that's probably coming back now. That proactivity, I think, is probably, we're starting to see that come back now over the last 3 or 4 years. But back then in the early noughties, mid noughties, it was kind of, I'll stick the house on Rightmove and wait for the phone to ring.
That's how it was back then.
Yeah, I think it's basically still that way now, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, Adam, because about the same time, that sort of 1998, year 2000, I was working in the UK for EMAP. And you may remember EMAP, I'm older than you, but they were without question the biggest media company in the UK. And one of my early jobs in 2001, 2002 was to visit real estate offices and talk about the fact this internet thing was going to be game changing. And the reliance on newspapers was something that real estate leaders needed to start to question. And I got laughed out of town. And you can imagine the cynicism back in 2001 when you start talking about such a significant change. And I would imagine that would have been fairly similar to you when you were sharing your views and advice on how real estate was going to roll out.
Yeah, absolutely. 2003 was when I first had the idea about Hatched. That was when I first sort of started looking at it and modeling it out. And I bottled it. You know, I was too scared to go out on my own. I was 25 at the time, 24, 25. So it took me 3 years to build up the courage to actually do it. And that was, it's probably lucky actually, because 2003 would have been too early, would have been far too early for it. 2006 was probably too early for it, for the marketplace. But yeah, 2003, it probably would have fallen flat on its face very quickly, I'd imagine.
I'm glad to be standing here today with two believers in the internet, because I'm a believer in the internet. I'm still a believer in the internet. So it's all good. Actually, I was going to ask you about Hatch, because that was one of, as I said, OG online business models. You ended up selling that to Connells Group, and that was described at the time as being industry defining. Looking back now, what was that time like for you, and what were the key learnings from that acquisition?
God, I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say, but no, it was a fascinating time. I mean, so Purple Bricks came along in 2014, and we'd been motoring along very nicely, growing at sort of 40% per year on every metric consistently. And we'd had lots of people coming into the marketplace saying they were going to be the next Hatch. And there was a couple of House Network and eMove with the other two companies at the time. And then somebody phoned me and said, Adam, I've got a company that's about to start up and I can't tell you the name, but they're purple in color and they've got loads and loads of money. And I went, okay, I've seen the others off in the past and we'll see these guys up again as well. And we didn't. And they just went like that. And they really scared the corporates and the industry, I would say, because they were just growing so rapidly, so quickly. And their mission was to destroy estate agency, really. That seemed to be the mission that was being fed through the media. And so I knew probably in 2014 that there'd be an acquisition of some sort by one of the corporates. So I went and saw all the big boys, and Connells obviously was one of them. I said no to Connells to start with. The very first meeting, I said no to them, which was unbelievable, really, when I look back now, turning Connells down. I mean, what a stupid decision that was. Unfortunately, they gave me a second chance when I came to my senses a few days later, and I phoned up David and said, look, David, I think I made a mistake here. You know, maybe we should sit down and discuss this properly. I wasn't ready for the size of that company. I often say that it's a bit like being at Plymouth Argyle in football terms and being transferred to Manchester City in today's terms. And you don't realize how big that club is. And I remember doing things like, I did a trademark, you know, our trademark was coming up and I renewed the trademark, and someone at Connell said, why are you doing that? And I said, well, I've always done that sort of thing. So we've got a department for that, you know, and that department for everything. And I was so used to being in the muck and bullets, and I really struggled to lift myself out of that and become more corporate and delegate and understand that there's a department for that and a department for this. And so I probably wasn't ready for that corporate life at that time. I learned a hell of a lot in that 18 months I was there. You know, I learned that really, that there was always somebody to lean on. But being an entrepreneur, you try and do everything yourself, don't you? That's kind of what we do as entrepreneurs. And I've learned that over the years, is that you have to do everything yourself when you first start up. To grow the business further, you have to step away and trust other people and have departments and delegate. And that's become something that I've actually started getting quite good at, or better at. I'm not good at, but better at for sure, over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, oh, it's good to hear. You just mentioned the Purple People. You know, Purple Bricks came to Australia as well, and in a blaze of, well, purple. And it's interesting, they didn't last too long. I don't think that they had the same sort of service principles and things that maybe they had in the UK. But the question that, you know, there have been a lot of, I would say, self-employment models in the last few years in Australia as well as the UK. And you've now made a huge success from the EXP model. What do you see there that others have obviously missed historically?
I have to credit Glenn Sample and Jason Gessing, who was the guy that hired me for the EXP, because, again, I turned them down to start with also. This is becoming a common trait, as I said, saying no and then change my mind a few days later. But so EXP came along, and I am going to get to the point here in the answer, but EXP came around and said, look, Adam, we're looking at launching in the UK and Australia. We'd like you to consider looking at the UK. We're talking to a number of people, but we like what you've done, da-da-da-da-da. And I said, no. And they came back and said, why not? And it's because you're going to make me use the words real estate, brokerage, licensing, closing, rather than completion, because that's what another American model has done when they've come into the UK. And I don't think the man on the street, whether that be an agent or a consumer, is going to want to use a company that uses words like real estate, because we don't use real estate in the UK or brokerage. And the second reason was that I felt that they were just going to make me recruit anybody. And so I'd learned from bitter experience at Easy Property when I ran that for a year for Stelios, which is EasyJet, is a very famous budget airline in the UK. And so Easy Property was one of the companies I ran, and my remit was to recruit agents and recruit anybody. So that failed miserably. And that was my biggest learning in my entire career, probably that year of work there. And so I said to Glenn and Jason, look, you know, I'm only going to do this if we put a minimum standard, a minimum number of years experience on agents joining, because I think it's really important in the UK to show proof of concept. And so they agreed to that. And so I took the role on. I think that, to their credit, what they've done really well in each country is they've allowed each country leader to use the nuances of their country to adopt the model. And that was, I often say, and I'm not sure Glenn likes when I say this, use this comparison, but if you go to McDonald's in the US compared to McDonald's in the UK compared to McDonald's in Poland, they all have the Big Mac, they all have the fries, and they all have the milkshake, but they all have individual items on the menu that is to that country's taste. And so with the EXP, what we've done is we've kept the cap, the split, the revenue share, and the equity, but we've layered in the nuances within that country. And I think that's what we've done really, really well. And what probably Purple Bricks, I don't know whether they did or they didn't, I've got no idea. My hunch is they probably didn't do that. They probably went into a market with, this is the model, and we're not budging from this, and we're not going to worry about the cultural differences in Australia and the US and wherever else they went, and just bulldoze their way in there with loads of cash and loads of TV advertising, thinking that that's going to be the way forward. And I think that's what we've done really well with the EXP, to be fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just really quickly, Adam, am I right in saying that you have head and shoulders of agents on your signboards in the UK?
If they want to, yeah. We don't force that upon them, but if they want to, yeah, we encourage it. We really believe in it. We love it. We think it's great.
Yeah, because I was saying to Samantha before we started that everywhere in Australia, the head and the shoulder of the agent is the big thing. It's like an advertisement for the agent, his mobile number, his Instagram, his Facebook, and so on and so forth. And I remember driving through Norfolk, I think, 3 or 4 months ago, and I saw an EXP sign with the agent's head and shoulder on. I said to my wife, that is so different in such a traditional market. And to the Australians listening to this, they'll be going, wow, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's right. If you're not on a signboard that's bigger than the house, then are we even real estating?
Yeah, that took a lot of getting used to for the agents. That wasn't part of the plan originally, that became a thing. And the more I went to America, you know, in America, you've got these huge, great billboards on the freeway, on the motorway, of lawyers and real estate agents and all that kind of stuff. And I saw that and thought, I started encouraging agents to do it. And so we started getting a bit of traction. And then those people that did that saw success. And then obviously we talk about success leaves clues and copy what works. And so then you start getting that cascading out. Not everybody does it, but, and everyone says, oh, but I've got a face for radio. And I say, well, we've all got faces for radios. We all believe. None of us look like David Beckham, unfortunately. So just get on with it and own it. That's kind of my advice to people.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of marketing, you're known for not, well, eXp is known for not spending a lot of money on marketing, like traditional above the line marketing. How have you managed to achieve such growth without that sort of expenditure?
LinkedIn. Yeah, I mean, content marketing, I did a lot of videos. So when I first started, so again, you're absolutely right. And fair play, you've done your homework, that's for sure. Because if we go into a new country, they'll say, what's the marketing budget? Or we say, nothing. You don't have a marketing budget. Like, you've got to use your influence and use free stuff to get the message out there and then use the model as well. So I think I spent a lot of time. I spoke to Chris Watkin when I first got the role. I said, Chris, I've got no marketing budget. What do you suggest? And he said, just content, film videos, tell stories, talk about your hopes, dreams, fears, frustrations. And I remember I did a video which was titled Clickbait, very clickbaity, you know, the day I turned the Connell CEO down. And that was a video that got 15,000 views when really I only had 4,000 or 5,000 followers at the time. And you know, that was a lot of views for me and a lot of clicks and what I really think about Purple Bricks and what it was like to work for Russell Quirk and what I think of Easy Property and videos that created clickbait. And they were honest videos. I wasn't lying. I told the truth and I was very honest in all of them. And I guess I was fortunate that I had a story to tell, but everyone has stories to tell. Everyone has stories to tell that other people are interested in, whatever level you're at. I think, you know, I'll watch someone who has just started out as an estate agent as much as I'll listen to you or watch you on a podcast or a video, because I think everyone's got interesting stories. And so I was probably the first one to be banging the drum about that. And all of a sudden people started getting in touch after a few videos. I was doing 3 videos a week was my target, was to do 3 videos a week. And then I don't want to give COVID all the credit. I want to take 5% of the credit, but COVID happened at the right time for us because the model lends itself to agents talking to other agents with the revenue share. And so the revenue share can be very lucrative for people, extraordinarily lucrative, where people go and recruit another agent. And people criticize us for that and say, oh, you're just recruiters. And say, well, we bring the agents on and they have to be successful for that person to earn any money off of them. So therefore, we're not just recruiters. Recruiters place somebody whether they, and they then don't care whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. We have to recruit agents and then help them to be successful for that person to be paid on that person's success. So I was pretty good at training that model. I was pretty good at finding the 3 or 4 people that were interested in that side of the model. You typically only get less than 10% of the people that are interested in that side of the model, and it's finding those people within the network that are interested. And I found a couple who were interested, and I worked with them literally on a daily basis. I would phone them up, they would phone me up. I'd coach them, I'd give them advice on what to do, how to talk to people, how to, the process of talking to an agent, attracting an agent, bringing an agent on board, helping them to succeed. And so I coached the coaches, or I coached those people to become coaches, really, and mentors of other people. And that's now cascaded out. But, you know, I think the other thing as well, have you ever seen The Lone Nut dancing in the field? How to Start a Movement. I can't remember the guy that filmed it, but if you Google How to Start a Movement or put it on YouTube, you'll see a guy in a field dancing on his own. And he gives this example of this guy's just dancing and dancing and dancing. He's the lone nut. But the true leader actually is the people that follow that lone nut. And then they start dancing with the lone nut. And then all of a sudden you get like 3 or 4 more people joining those 1 or 2 people. The leader needs one person to follow them. If the leader has one person following them, then you start seeing more people follow them. It's a great video. Go and check that out. How to Start a Movement. It's on a TED Talk and on YouTube. It's really, really cool. Very good.
You'll be putting that in the link, Sam?
Yeah, definitely. We'll put that in the link. I mean, I'm trying to start a movement by putting weird things in a pie maker, like cooking eggs and stuff like that. I could catch on.
And just before we move on to the next question, so Plymouth Argyle, you probably don't know much about Plymouth Argyle, but are managed by the famous Wayne Rooney, who I think everybody knows. So he hasn't been sacked yet, has he, Adam?
No, he will be soon, I'm sure, because he's...
Yeah, and I guess before we pass on that point, I think there's a really valuable lesson there for anyone who's listening, and that is to all the leaders out there who want to get on social media, the ones that say, oh, it's not about me, it's about the brand. I think that's a seriously valuable lesson in recruitment there, that it is actually about you because you've got to put yourself out there to attract people to your brand.
100%. Unfortunately, it is. And those who want to hide behind their brand, I think you look at all the big businesses, we all know the leaders of that business. I mean, the established brands we don't, but the new brands, you know, Elon Musk and others, they're all on social media, they're all visible. again, I've told this story a few times, but you go onto Twitter or X and Richard Branson has more followers than Virgin. Elon has more followers than Tesla. People follow people. They don't follow brands. And unfortunately, people used to say to me, oh, it's the Adam Day show with EXP. And I said, well, yeah, it is, unfortunately, because that's how you build a brand. You have to have someone at the forefront who's prepared to put their head above the parapet and be shot at and take those shots and lead from the front. That's what leadership's about, is showing people the way and getting people to follow.
Yeah, amazing. Let's change the topic of conversation to technology because, look, even I can remember when I interviewed Glenn Sanford back in 2015 and I can hardly believe that was 10 years ago now because I still feel so young. But this virtual world was like groundbreaking, earth-shattering. And I remember I used to work for British Telecom back in the day. British Telecom were very innovative in Australia. I remember going to where they had all this expensive video conferencing equipment and would cost an arm and a leg basically and a left kidney to be able to have a face-to-face with somebody in the UK. But this virtual world kind of changed all that, you know, and I remember thinking how amazing it would have been to be able to have the best solution or the best people across the globe that were available to you just by walking into the Sims kind of thing. How has that platform evolved over 10 years and how have your agents embraced that global community?
Yes, that for me was probably one of the things that really got me interested in EXP. I remember the guy that introduced me to EXP, a guy from North Carolina originally, the second meeting we had, he said, oh, meet me in my office. And I said, what? You know, what do you mean meet you in your office? So I'm in the UK, you're in North Carolina. What, you going to fly me over? He said, no, I'll send you a link. And I went, okay. And he was very vague about it. And I clicked this link and downloaded this thing on my desktop. And I thought, is he sent me a virus or something? Is he scamming me yet? Anyway, this thing opened up. I created this character and started wandering around this virtual world. And so you literally walk around as if you're a campus, like The Sims, very like The Sims, like you say. And it blew my mind. I remember shouting through, sitting in this office here, saying to my wife, come and have a look at this. And my kids, who were 7 and 5 at the time or something, and of course, they loved it. They absolutely fell in love with it. And, oh, Dad, look at this. This is amazing. So that was crazy when I first saw that. That's now a web application rather than a desktop application. So it's now you can go to exp.world/international. And on my office is in there. And I'm in my office 9 till 6, Monday to Friday, as long as I'm not on the road. So anyone can come in and they can just drop into exp.world/international. And Glenn's often in there. So Glenn talks about one of the most successful ways of managing people when you're in an office is MBWA, managing by walking around. It's in a book that he's read somewhere about management and leadership and how to manage people, MBWA. And so what Glenn does is he MBAA, manages by avataring around. So he walks around, Glenn will come in, I'll be in my office. And obviously Glenn comes in at like 2 p.m. my time because he's 8 hours behind. And he drops in and says, oh, hey, Adam, how are you doing? And we have a little chat and it's crazy. He's in Seattle. I'm in just outside London and he's able to come in. And we have incidental meetings. You know, I bumped into someone in the corridor the other day and there was a job that was outstanding and a marketing task. And I bumped into Sarah and said, oh, Sarah, did you manage to get that done? She said, oh, yes, sorry, I didn't send that to you. And those incidental meetings, it's just like being in an office. It's so weird. But we do all of our onboarding in there. All of our agents come in. They do the onboarding in the virtual world. We do our meetings in the virtual world. We have our board meetings in there. We have our QBRs, quarterly business reviews in there. We do everything in that virtual world. And yeah, so anyone can check it out, exp.world, or go to exp.world/international and you'll find me in there very often.
I might come visit you.
Come and visit me, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, with being so forward back then, how are you guys thinking about generative AI and how are you bringing that into your business?
Yeah, that's another big focus of Glenn. You know, we work daily. We're always creating our own GPTs and that's becoming integral in our business. We've been using Coda as well, which is like a doc maker, which basically does everything. You know, you can build websites in Coda, you can add Trello board type interfaces, and we're just getting a lot done, put it that way. We've got through so much work in the last 3 months. Glenn's been much more involved in international the last 3 months, and we've probably done more in the last 3 months than we have in the last 10 years, I would say, because of AI and how we've been able to create documents and guidelines and slide decks. And I mean, I created a business plan for 2025 in about 6 minutes the other day. Went to GPT, asked it to create a business plan, and it asks you for your input numbers. What did you do in 2024? And then it builds your whole business plan. You chuck it into Gamma, uploads the Gamma.app, and then create the slideshow. And all of a sudden, you've got a whole business plan that I then presented to the European and Indian country leaders and all the staff on Tuesday. And it took me about 6 minutes to put that together, which would be a job normally would take me a whole week. normally to put all that together and create slides and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we're really diving into that. And Glenn's, I mean, he's so smart. It's ridiculous. Sometimes he talks and I'm thinking, I have to go back to him and say, Glenn, what did you mean by that? Can you actually show me? Because he's so far ahead of everybody in terms of that tech stuff. It's crazy.
Adam, just a question on that. So my home county is Rutland, which I think is the smallest county in the UK, once was part of Leicestershire. And Rutland still have milkmen delivering milk to doors. It's a very traditional county. And, you know, there are real estate offices there that very much live and operate how they've done for decades and decades and decades. What advice would you give to real estate leaders that are trying to bring their team on this AI journey? You're trying to open their mind to what's possible. You just described what's possible, but I think we would agree that getting people to change and adopt new things is not the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, I'm not sure they will change. I think there's a lot of people out there that are in those sorts of areas and running those sorts of business that are probably in their mid to late 50s and thinking, I'll be retired in 5 years. I don't need to worry about it. I'm not sure they realize how quickly things could change though with AI. I mean, they'll look back at the internet and say, well, the internet took 5 years to take off and Rightmove took 5-6 years. And by then I'll be retired when AI takes off. And you know, the more and more I see and more Glenn teaches me and more I learn and sit here and learn myself. And, you know, HeyGen, I mean, I've been using that for translate. Now I'm covering Europe. I've been filming videos, uploading it to HeyGen, recording it in all the different languages. And it lip syncs. It is unbelievable. And you can start seeing what that can then generate and how that can become useful for me when, if I don't want to record the video, you just do text to speech and have an avatar that looks like you, sounds like you, lip syncs like you. And you just then get GPT to write the script and upload it. And HeyGen does the rest. And I don't even have to record the video. And that's how quickly things can move. And that will replace a lot of things and people and probably quicker than 5 years time. So, I mean, if they were both going to take the advice, it was get to events, see people like Sam and talk and learn and spend half a day a week just learning and playing with stuff. You're not going to break anything. Just play around with stuff and figure it out and watch videos and talk to the youngsters. Or talk to people like Glenn.
Yeah. I tell you what, Sam, listening to Adam must be music to your ears.
Oh, yeah. All the things that you just talked about then. I think I've had about 3 avatars that I've used over a period of time. And I love my avatar because she never gets sick. She never gets tired, never has a bad hair day. Makeup's always perfect. Doesn't matter about the weather. I can even change outfits on her now.
Do you have your own avatar? Do you have your avatar that's you, or do you have avatars that are not you? You know what I mean?
Not me, but I've got one that I created very early on with Synthesia that was terrible, like had more lip syncing issues than Milli Vanilli in the 80s. And then I had one that I created with HeyGen that could tell the Downton Abbey story in about 10 languages. And then now recently that captions app, all you have to do with that app on your phone is talk to it for 30 seconds. And it will create an avatar based on whatever you're wearing that day. And then it will also do all the editing for you as well. Like, so I created this crazy video about cats and Christmas trees just to see how it worked. Because in the battle of the Christmas tree versus the cat always wins. To edit that sort of a video, even 5 years ago, would have taken a very talented video editor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. 11 Labs as well. And there's so many. I mean, it's the race to who's going to become the next big $1 trillion company. It's one of those, which one's going to come out ahead? But there's a lot of good companies out there. And when you say the cats and the Christmas tree, I've just got 2 kittens and the Christmas tree went up literally on Sunday. And we've found the 2 kittens in the Christmas tree every morning when we wake up and baubles off the thing and they're chewing the lights. And the kittens are so annoying. They're scratching on my door right now, actually. So yes, cats and Christmas trees made me laugh.
That's it. The cat always wins. Anyway, look, I think it's been wonderful to get to know you and talk to you and be able to bring some of the UK's best to Australia on the Elevate podcast. So thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom with everyone. If there was one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with, whether it's a little tip or a wish for the new year for the industry or something like that, what would it be?
I wish people would just put themselves out there more. And I guess try stuff, break stuff. Be consistent with stuff. Don't give up straight away. You know, I talk a lot about, we've got Roger Black and Steve Backley as our ambassadors who are famous Olympians in the UK. And I've learned from them about having an Olympic mindset. You know, I talk about having an Olympic mindset and just trying stuff and realizing that what you're good at, you were once bad at. And if you want to become good at something, then you will be bad at that thing for a period of time. But the more you do it, the more you practice, whether that be starting a new business, whether that be learning AI, whether that be getting kittens for the first time, it's going to be not very pleasant the first few weeks and months. But you've just got to understand that you will get out the other side and probably become good at that thing as long as you're consistent and keep going at it. So I just hate seeing people give up. I think that's the worst thing people can do. And I love a tryout, but just keep trying, keep trying, and keep trying. You'll get there in the end.
Yeah, I think that beautifully describes real estate, actually. Great tip. Adam Day, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.